Well, we've been in the book of 1 Peter, and we'll be in 2 Peter eventually. And we've been studying a little bit on Sunday nights, a little bit about Peter's life. And 2 weeks ago, I think it was, we went through his denials and sort of what his thinking process was and how it all played out. And last week, we started back at the beginning, and we worked our way all the way back to the denial section. And tonight we are going to see how Peter was restored. I think it's a good way to sort of get an understanding of the man who ended up writing these books of the Bible. So we left off with this denial, the facts about the denial. One of the interesting things I don't think I mentioned is that every interaction that Peter had that night, every single one of them was a lie. He said, "I don't know the man." That was a lie. He had known him for 3 years. "You know, I'm not even from that area of the country." Yeah, he was. Every single one of them was a lie. One of the worst lies was he said, "I don't know the man." He just called Jesus a regular guy. The man. Okay, that's a lie. He's not just a man. He's God. And then he began cursing and swearing. And Luke 22, you don't have to turn there because we're going to John 21. But Luke 22:62 says that Peter wept bitterly. Yeah, pretty sorrowful for him, a man that had walked and lived with Jesus for 3 years, now has just lied about Jesus. And he walks away and he wept bitterly. Well, in those 3 days that Jesus was dead and Jesus came back to life, Peter must have sort of started to recover a little bit from that trauma of that night and the trauma of the denial. And he ran, well, I don't think he ran, I think John ran on ahead, and Peter went into the tomb. And it was empty. And then there were some other occasions where Peter and some of the disciples saw Jesus. But probably, mentally, he must have figured that his ministry was over. He probably started reflecting on some different things that did happen even while Jesus was still alive. You know, "I'm a failure. I've denied Jesus. I've you know, misrepresented Jesus. And even when I was an apostle, when I walked out in the water, I almost drowned." So probably all these failures started to come to mind. So he decides he's going to go back to his old job, which was fishing. John 21 says, "After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias, and in this way he showed himself, Simon Peter, Thomas, Nathanael, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples were together. Simon Peter said to them, 'I am going fishing.'" That's what Peter says. "I'm going fishing." Now, I'm told, and I'm not a Greek scholar like Bonnie Bates is, but I'm told that this "I'm going fishing," the tense there is, I'm going back to my old way of life permanently. I've sort of messed up too much. I've been a failure as an apostle, as the disciple. I am going fishing. And Peter is kind of a leader, isn't he? When he talks, people sort of listen and people follow. And what do the other people say? The other disciples said to him, "We are going with you also." Okay? And they went out, they got into the boat, and that night they caught nothing. Now, it doesn't matter how much experience you have fishing if Jesus tells the fish not to go in your net, which I think that's what happened that night. But when the morning had now come, Jesus stood on the shore, yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to them, "Children, do you have any food?" And they answered, "No." And he said to them, "Cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you'll find some." So they cast, and they were not able to draw it in because of the amount of fish. Therefore, that disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." Now when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he had removed it, and he plunged into the sea, dove into the sea. But the other disciples came in the little boat, for they were not far from land, but about 200 cubits, dragging the net with the fish. Then as soon as they had come to land, they saw a fire of coals there and the fish laid on it and bread. And Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish which you have just caught. Simon Peter went up and dragged the net to land full of large fish, 153. And although there were so many, the net was not broken. Jesus said to them, come and eat breakfast. Yet none of the disciples dared ask them, who are you? Knowing that it was the Lord. Jesus then came and took the bread and gave it to them and likewise the fish. This is now the third time Jesus showed himself to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. So when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these? He said to him, yes, Lord. You know that I love you. And Jesus said to him, feed my lambs. He said to him again a second time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, tend my sheep. He said to him a third time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. Most assuredly, I say to you, when you were younger, you girded yourself and walked where you wished. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and another will gird you and carry you where you do not wish. This he spoke, signifying by what death he would glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he said to him, follow me. Then classic Peter, verse 20. What does it say Peter does? Turns around. He's not really following Christ. He looks away from Christ. He turns around and saw John. That's the disciple whom Jesus loved, who also had leaned on his breast at the supper and said, Lord, who is the one who betrays you? And Peter, seeing him, said to Jesus, but Lord, what about this man? Peter turns around, not following Jesus, says, hey, what about this guy? Jesus said to him, if I will that he remain till I come, what is that to you? You follow me. Very interesting verses there. Verse 15, that first question, do you love me? It ends up being repeated a total of two more times for three. Lots of stuff is bound up in that question. There's all kinds of different sermons and the way people approached it. The first being love for Christ is a prerequisite for Christian service. I think that's a key idea we need to understand tonight. Love for Christ is a prerequisite for Christian service. Jesus had to know that Peter loved him. Are you familiar with the seven churches in Revelation and the letters written to each one? I think it's Revelation 2. I think it's even the first one is the Ephesian church, the church at Ephesus. They were a pretty good church by for all intents and purposes. They had great works. There was no evil. They were chasing out apostasy and heresy in their church. But it says they had left their first love. They didn't really love Christ. And that's a prerequisite for Christian service. You must love Jesus. Don't love yourself. Don't love the actual fruit of the ministry. That's what a lot of people do, even churches. They sort of get wrapped up into this idea, well, look what we have. And they start to love that ministry. Or maybe even the building or some object other than Jesus. But Jesus says, love me. Love me. Notice Jesus' response to Peter's answers. Every single time, feed my sheep, tend my lambs, on and on and on. This response. That's love in action. It's no different than John 14, verse 15. I'll flip over there really quick. John 14, 15 says, Jesus said, if you love me, keep my commandments. If you love me, minister to my people. Tend to the sheep. help them, restore them when they're lost, and bring them down when they're fallen. For Peter, if he really loves the Lord, he will serve the Lord. Lots of people say they love Jesus, but are they serving him? You know, a lack of obedience or a lack of service, that sort of betrays your allegiance. Well, I love Jesus, but, you know, you're not really serving him, not really doing much for him. I'm not convinced you really do. And this is what Jesus is sort of pounding home to Peter. And then Peter, he sort of gets corrected these times. And verse 21, he turns around. He's worried about John. Don't worry about other people. Don't worry about this. Don't worry about that. Focus on the Lord, right? But he's worried about John. Jesus says, don't worry about him. You know, in order to serve Christ well, I think our focus has to be on him. We must love him. Our focus must be on him. We talked about that a little bit this morning. You know, do what you need to do in your life and ministry for Jesus Christ. Don't keep your eyes on other people. Well, are they right up where they need to be? Are they level with me? No, Jesus says, do what you need to do. That's what's most important. You and Christ. You and Christ. The question isn't whether you're a theologian or not. The question isn't whether you go to Sunday school every week or not. The question is whether you are loving and following Christ or not. I think every one of these statements that Jesus is making is directly about our personal walk with God, your walk with God. And that's something that only you and God know. I mean, I can look at you folks, and generally speaking, I know somewhat about your service and your ministry and your church attendance and things like that, but there's a whole big section of your life that I know nothing about, but God knows about it. I think that's what he's concerned about. And Peter, I think deep down inside and mentally, he knows that he's messed up so many times. You know, I'm probably better off fishing, better off doing what I used to do. But he sees Christ, and what does he do? He jumps in the water, swims it as fast as he can. He's still that very impulsive person. But even if Peter, and this is a positive thing about Peter, even if he knew that he had a difficult time maintaining a relationship with Christ, you know he really wanted one. And I hope that's true for us. You know, this morning we talked about that a lot. This world is not an easy place to live our lives as far as the trials and the sufferings, but this world is also not an easy place to maintain a great relationship with Jesus. I mean, we have the world, we have our flesh that's pulling us away, we have the devil that's constantly tempting us and after us, trying to bring us down, right? All those trials and temptations that we're facing, the devil's trying to use those for in an evil way in our hearts and lives, and we have all this pressure. It's not easy. But I hope that deep down inside, no matter the ups and downs you go to, even if maintaining a relationship with Christ is difficult, I hope that deep down inside you really want one. And I believe that's what Christ is finding out in Peter. How bad does he want me? How badly does he love me? Did Peter love Jesus more than anything else? I think that's a crucial question. Even for us, do we love Jesus more than anything else? More than anything? I mean, really get to the bottom of that. More than anything. Is Jesus precious to you? funny thing, as I've been reading 1 Peter, I've seen that Christ was precious to Peter. That word precious between the books of 1 and 2 Peter is used 8 times. Now, if you hop on the internet, type in precious, it's used a total of 15 times in the entire New Testament. 8 times just in Peter's writings. 7 times in the rest of the New Testament. Christ was precious to Peter. Is Christ precious to you? Is he precious to you? Jesus asks again, I think I already briefly mentioned this, okay, are you willing to follow me? And Jesus actually lays out that, hey, you're going to die, right? You're going to be, your arms are going to be stretched out. What's that a picture of? Crucifixion. Okay, and tradition tells us, Jesus tells us, but tradition tells us that Peter was crucified. And it says he was bound up and carried away, even though he didn't necessarily want to go. Okay. Right now, Peter's sort of in control of his life, but eventually he's going to be tied up and he's not going to have any control. And Jesus said, hey, are you willing to follow me even to death? Am I that precious to you? What's your relationship with Jesus like? Is he precious? Do you love him? Or are you like, isn't that easy to do? We're confronted with a sermon, and we instantly start thinking of, well, you know, Johnny, you know, he's the one that needs to hear that. So-and-so, they're the ones that need that. But Jesus says, no, you. Do you love him? Are you willing to make sacrifices, even to death? Are you willing to follow him all the way? I think it's, as we're going to get through Peter, you're going to see that apparently that day his life was transformed. And I know over the years I've met different folks who've said, you know what, I've messed up too much at this point. Ever hear anybody suggest something like that? I've messed up too much. All I can think of is, you've messed up more than Peter? You've messed up more than Paul? I mean, think about Paul. He was murdering Christians. He was imprisoning Christians. He was separating families and selling them off to slavery and to who knows what. You've done that? A lot of people, they come to me with this huge list of sins, and they're like, Pastor Josh, I'm pretty bad. I've messed up a lot. I'm about to tell you something that, you know, you're not going to believe. Your jaw's going to drop. I'm like, wait a second. That's like junior varsity compared to Paul. Well, I've cursed God. Well, did you curse God publicly multiple times, lying about Christ? No, you know, it was just in my own house or something. I was frustrated one night and I cursed God. Well, you know what? If God can forgive Peter for cursing him publicly, then he's going to forgive you. Okay, you're not ever really too far gone. And I began studying and thinking about these other people in the Bible that are just, you know, did all this crazy stuff. And in fact, that's what our next sermon series on Sunday night is going to be, the people who made mistakes in the Bible. Moses, he killed somebody. Peter, Paul, others. I think there's really only a few that just totally did things bad enough where they weren't going to be restored or forgiven because they didn't even care about forgiveness. One of them was Judas Iscariot. But I don't think anybody here has come to that level. So you know what? No matter how far you've gone, you can get to the point where Jesus is precious to you. His blood. You see that in Peter? His blood's precious. This morning there was another, that was in verse 18, I believe, or 19, somewhere around there. There's another one where it's just precious. Just precious, precious, one after the other. You know, I hope, I guess, as a pastor, you hope a lot of things for people, and you hope a lot of things for the church, that we could be loving the community. You know, I've said many times, you know, God's given us this building. I love to see it full. But I guess when we get down to it, I guess my biggest hope is that Jesus would be precious to you as an individual. You know, if Jesus is precious to you as that individual, a lot of these other worries and concerns, I think they'll just fall away. Because I got my eyes on the prize. I got my eyes on Jesus. We're not worried so much about all this other stuff. You know, if we have our eyes on Jesus, Jesus is precious to us, and this joy of the Lord, right, this outrageous joy is just sort of bubbling and overflowing, and people come in through those back doors for the very first time and visit, they're going to see, wow, those folks love Jesus. They're going to want to stay. So what if the sermon wasn't that great? So what if the music, there was a little bit of fumbles here and there? So what if, some part of the children's ministry was, there was a cobweb up at the corner or something like that? If we love Jesus, people are going to want to be around us. And I think that's what Jesus is telling Peter. I think that's what he's trying to get Peter to understand. Do you love me? So as we go our separate ways this week, and I hope you do devotions throughout the week. I hope you're communicating with God throughout the week. Just really meditate on, is Jesus precious to you? Think about that. Is there any questions? Any comments? I did have a comment. I think we're going to have the kids take offering more often because we took in a bigger offering tonight than we have in weeks. I'm messing with. Is there any questions? All right, let's pray. Father God, we are thankful that you restored Peter. And we are thankful that whenever we fall, whenever we fail, that you can restore us. And you can restore us to even greater heights than what we ever thought. We're thankful that Peter decided that you were precious, your son was precious to him, and that he was going to follow you no matter what. We're thankful that for his ministry of preaching the gospel and being a leader in the early church, and even his legacy still extends down to us today, a couple thousand years later. Father, I am confident and I know that if all these believers, all my friends here in this church and church family, if we all decided that your son was precious, you know, I know that you would have a legacy for us. Maybe not quite as high as Peter's, but I know that you'll do great things the more we love you. In Jesus' name, amen. You can go ahead and be seated. Did you were supposed to sing another one?
No.
Okay, we have some extra time. I have an announcement I forgot. And then we can talk about some other things too. Lynette's mother... the funeral is going to be at Schwartz on Hill Road. The visitation is Wednesday from 2 to 8, and the funeral will be 11 a.m. Thursday. And there's going to be a dinner apparently at Eagles on Dord Highway. So that's about Lynette's mom, Charlotte Wright. So if you want that, I have this paper if you want to get all that. A couple of the other things, just... there's going to be a business meeting, quarterly business meeting. Is it the 17th or the 18th? Whatever that Sunday is. It's just in 2 or 3 weeks. I think 3 weeks. And hopefully all of you have been contacted by a deacon and asked the question if you think we should look towards an associate pastor to help with different things, a youth pastor or a music pastor, or what we needed to do. And I guess as the pastor, right, I want you to keep praying about that and thinking about that. We've already had a couple resumes turned in. I really haven't been aggressive trying to search them out, but we've had a couple resumes turned in. If you have any thoughts, talk to your deacon about it. When they call, share your thoughts, because we need to really, we want an idea of what the congregation wants. So be thinking about that. And the other thing is, just a point of business, and there's going to be a formal recommendation coming from the deacons in regards to, we've had a number of lights, and maybe you'll notice this tonight, maybe it's not quite dark enough, another number of lights around the building that haven't been working properly. And if, when you're trying to get in your car at night, it's a little dark and maybe a little creepy, and you see things in the shadows lurking. Well, we have an electrician here at church, and he had a light salesman come out, and he analyzed all the fixtures and even the gym fixtures and even these fixtures, and he figured out the wattage that this is pulling and if they are on for an average of so many hours per day. And he went out and got all a quote for new LED light fixtures, all new ones out in the parking lot. Basically, it's going to cost $9,500, but the consumers has a thing till the end of this year that you can get part of that back because you're going to get some energy savings. So we would get about $3,500 back. So the cost of the church would be $6,000, and since it's using so much less electricity, we would save that $6,000 in electric bills in 1.7 years. So under 2 years, we'd have a cost savings. So after that, obviously every year would be continued savings. So long term, I think it sounds like a great idea. And like I say, the deacons are going to give a formal recommendation here in the next week or so regarding the lights. Either of those things, since we have a few minutes, about 10, 15 minutes, you go ahead and ask a question. You don't need that? What is it?
Is that all the fixtures too, or just the light bulbs?
Okay, William's question is that fixtures or just bulbs? The exterior lights, there's several lights, I think 9 of them, that are attached to the building and a couple that are in the yard. Those ones would all get new fixtures. The gymnasium would get all new fixtures. The parking lot lights would get all new fixtures. The only place that you would just be replacing bulbs is in here. And I think there's 9 bulbs per fixture in here. Is that right, Fred? Is there 9? It's 8 or 9. 1, 2, 3. So there's a lot of bulbs. When Fred and I priced out LEDs before, what was it, like $10 a bulb? And there was like, it was going to be like $900. The price on there he was going to give us was $850 a bulb for the LED on his quote for in here. So does that answer your question? Is there any other questions regarding either of those?
Less bulbs?
Actually, it'll be the same amount of bulbs, and it's going to be a lot less wattage that it's pulling, but they're actually going to be brighter. And even the gym right now, if you turn off the lights and you want to turn them back on, or a kid accidentally shuts them off, it takes about 10 to 15 minutes for them to warm back up. All these LED lights are going to be instant on, instant off. So, for instance, the daycare, it's best for them when they come in the morning at 6 a.m., they turn on the gym lights, they don't get shut off till 6 p.m. And sometimes they're not even using the gym, but they don't want to have to hassle that waiting. So with LED, flip them off. So you may even see a quicker recovery of the cost. Dave. Correct. His question, for those of you who didn't hear it, was LEDs are dimmable. Correct. LEDs are dimmable. Mm-hmm. That quote was just for the parts. Ron Baldwin's the electrician. Between him and I and maybe another helper or two that can help him, will be doing the labor. The only thing we're going to maybe have to hire done, or there'll be another cost associated with it, is those parking lot lights. We're going to need some kind of a lift, like a boom truck or something, to get ourselves up there. And in the gym, we've rented a lift several times that we use in here in the gym. We'd have to rent that. But other than that, I think most of the labor is going to be sort of donated. Fred. Yes, and I did share that with Ron too, so that's a possibility. It'll reach it. Caleb. Yep, the Caleb just brought up the point about how long the bulbs will last. Since I've been here, okay, in the last 8 years since I've been had intimate knowledge of the maintenance around this building, I think we've probably replaced every light bulb in the parking lot. We do about one or two a year. In here, when we were using the old style bulbs, one time I think we had 21 bulbs out or something in here. I came in one day, I'm like, this place looks dark. I started going around, there's 21 bulbs burnt out. We have switched to the curly Q that lasts a little bit longer. So every church workday, which is about every 6 months, we're probably replacing a half a dozen. If we do the LED, we're probably going to see 4 or 5 years, maybe. Will they all run? Will they all go out at the same time? Okay. They actually have a guarantee on the bulbs. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I don't have that quote right in front of me to see all the detailed verbiage, but the salesman's right here from Fenton, correct? And his children went to the Montessori. So it was a really good thing. Any other questions? Ed. Who are we going to sell them to? Yeah, we'll sell them. You can buy them. Don. Okay. Oh, the question was about windows in Montessori. Yes, I think there's going to be a deacon recommendation there too. I think they've got 3 bids. I didn't want to speak to that quite yet because I'm not sure what contractor they decided or how many windows. I'm pretty sure at the very minimum they're going to recommend that we do the corner classrooms down there that they have a problem heating and cooling. We have about $20,000 in the savings account from Montessori income, so we could probably do the light project and the window project, and you'd save money on electricity and hopefully save some money on heat. And in the long run, that helps Montessori. It helps us. And, you know, they'll keep sort of building up that money in their account. And when it comes time for the gym roof, perhaps next summer, when it comes time to recarpet in here, things like that, we should have enough money built up there as well. So... yeah, that's definitely on the minds, the windows, correct. Is there anything else? Okay. That only took about 5 minutes, 6 minutes. Mike, EB, our treasurer, another thing, if you are involved in a ministry, we're going to be working on our budget here for 2016. If you're involved in a ministry and you have some idea or something you'd like to do next year, and you look kind of what your budget was this year, and you're like, I think it's going to cost a little bit more than that, you need to write him a note, and or somebody from the finance committee. There's even these budget request forms if you want to dig through those, and you can formally request. So then when we have the meetings putting the budget together, we kind of know, okay, you know, they would like this much more money over than normal. And don't just say, yeah, I want $5,000 more than normal. If you want that money, kind of line item it out. Okay, I want to do this event. It's going to cost this much for this much for that. And sort of that'll help us as we're doing that, kind of come to a clear picture of some of the things that different ministries have planned. So I know I've been encouraging folks to do that. I know Ed has been working on maybe hopefully relaunching a choir here soon, and he was asking me, well, you know, what's the budget like for a choir? I said, well, this is what it's been in the past. If you have some plans, let us know. Caleb has some ideas in the sound booth as far as reoccurring expenses instead of just constantly reacting, that we are working ahead. So I suggested, hey, if you have some ideas on a line item for that, let them know. And that would be true with every ministry. Anything else? Everybody? Nothing else? Oh, I knew there'd be at least one more. Dave, what did I get for my birthday? I got a silver eagle, 2015 silver eagle. That's a dollar, silver dollar. And my mom got me this thing. It goes over your hand, and you grab it, and it's like an exercise thing to work your wrist. She got it at a garage sale for a dollar. So that was included in my present. So I'm trying to get good at arm wrestling. And one of the youth group students says his goal is to beat me by spring. And I said, well, I'm trying to beat people that are big and strong too. So that's going to be a big goal. And I just got another tool to get better. But I got, what else did I get? I don't know. Off the top of my head, I don't know. Oh, yeah, I got some pliers, and I got Crocodile Dundee. Remember that movie? This ain't a knife, or that ain't a knife. This is a knife. Remember that? So it's always one of my favorites, the cheesy old 80s movie, but... yeah, it was a fun day, and I got to grill some steaks and things like that. But I think that we've pretty much, we can wrap things up. Let's see, who do I want to pick on to pray? You're volunteering to pray? No. Oh, yeah. Oh, no. No, we're hoping to get that completed at the very latest by the church workday. I'm trying to get some things done before this missions conference. We're trying to actually work on an updated missions board and that information booth that or welcome center. And I was... all day Thursday, I was building the Welcome Center, and it's coming along pretty well. And it's got some yellow boards and some blue boards. And if you looked at it right now, you wouldn't like it. But the finished product, it'll look nice. But and actually, when we bring that over to the church, I'm going to need about a half dozen guys to carry it. It's pretty big. Green and white? Oh, yeah. No, I didn't mean Michigan. No, the guy we were working, he just started bringing out these old boards that were painted different colors, and we were cutting them up and things like that. But that's one of the things. They're wanting to move some storage areas around, and the stuff that's stored in that one room is going to become Brenda's room, and I think Brenda's current room is going to be your room. So we just got to, and that's another thing, and I've mentioned this several times.
What? I'm not trying to rush anybody.
Yeah. Oh no, we'll get that done, hopefully by the work day. And what was I gonna say? Oh yeah, I just thought of it. If you see any old junk around here, one of the things is we have really too much space that's being used for storage. We'd rather use space for things like a classroom. So if there's some old junk. We have a 6-yard dumpster out there. We can stuff it full if need be. Clear out some of the old stuff, and if it's good and usable, we can actually sell some of it. We have, in fact, 3 checks waiting for us at this consignment shop. We have to actually go up there and get them or something like that. So, there's different ways. But, Bill, I am going to pick on you to close in prayer. Could you do that?